It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, sports with Sunny Delfiette, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the broadcast. I'm Bill Price, congressman linked to Chinese spa.
It's a very serious story.
And it is our top story at noon. A bombshell report from Axios says China has been targeting California Democratic Congressman Eric Swalwell in a scheme to get insider information from the U.S. government.
If I'm a Chinese leader and I want information from the United States, I'm going to target Eric Swalwell.
Former U.S. Attorney Brett Tolman says the congressman was one of the loudest voices accusing President Trump of working for the Russians, while at the same time being targeted by the Chinese.
He's just the kind of target that is going to have the audacity to believe that he's above all the other rules. He can point fingers at other people while at the same time he's posing as a national security threat.
Former Utah Republican Congressman Jason Chaffetz says what makes this story so disturbing is the fact that Eric Swalwell sits on the House Intelligence Committee.
I want to know exactly what Speaker Pelosi knew. She, and she alone, is the person that appoints people to that select committee. Why did they have to have him in that committee when they know that he has potentially been compromised?
The Axios report says China has been going after several high-profile lawmakers in Washington to expand their interests in the U.S. Mo Alifi, the former communications director for the DNC.
Swalwell wasn't the only person. There were folks across the country, including some mayors in the middle of the country. And let's also be clear, it wasn't a one-party thing.
Alifi says the Chinese have been targeting both political parties for years. Last week, National Intelligence Director John Ratcliffe said China posed the greatest risk to the U.S. Supreme challenge. That is the other big story at noon.
He does not have a lot of runway left.
President Trump's legal fight to stay in office dealt a serious blow yesterday when the high court rejected a bid to overturn the results in Pennsylvania. The state Supreme Court in Nevada also refusing to hear the president's case. George Washington University law professor Jonathan Turley.
We've talked in the past about how the president was running out of runway, and at this point, to really make a difference, he'd have to land a jumbo jet on a postage stamp.
Despite the setback in Pennsylvania and Nevada, the president's fight is not over. Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton has asked the high court to nullify electoral votes from Georgia, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. Paxton says those states exploited the pandemic to make unlawful changes to their state election laws.
Our request is we want to be heard. The only place we can go is the U.S. Supreme Court. And so we're pleading with the U.S. Supreme Court. Please hear our case. Give us a chance at least to argue what we think is right. We want to argue the Constitution.
Paxton says state election laws in several key battleground states were changed to make it easier for Joe Biden to win. Election lawyer John Pavia.
The biggest problem that the Trump team has had is being able to come forward with evidence that's been compelling. It's not like there's been no evidence. And so when people say, oh, there's no evidence of fraud, there's no evidence of this or that, that's not true. We've seen there's pieces of evidence. But again, you need to have clear and convincing evidence of some kind of real defect or systemic problem.
And the problem the president is facing right now is the clock. He does not have much time. Tom DelBecchero, the author of The Divided Era, and the former Republican Party chairman from California.
Time is running out. Rudy is right. They have evidence, but do they have the time?
Next Monday, the Electoral College meets. By December 23rd, they'll deliver their votes to Congress. Then, on January 6th, Congress officially declares a winner. A county judge in California has ruled against COVID-19 restrictions on outdoor dining in the Golden State. Fox News reporter Marianne Rafferty has more from L.A.
In a 73-page ruling, an L.A. judge said the county did not make its case for the indefinite shutdown, writing the restaurant closure order is an abuse of the department's emergency powers, is not grounded in science, evidence, or logic, and should be adjudicated to be unenforceable as a matter of law.
That is Marianne Rafferty reporting. The local restaurant association says just 3% of COVID outbreaks have taken place at restaurants, and Governor Gavin Newsom's shutdown order is unconstitutional. Andrew Gruhl owns 7 restaurants in Southern California.
It's crystal clear that, either as Congress or the elected officials, they're owned by corporate America or Silicon Valley, and the rules don't apply to them, but they obviously apply to all of us small businesses, and we're getting crushed like an anvil on a dove bird, and, they didn't seem to care about it. I don't know what's in the minds of the people making these decisions, but it's hurting a lot of us.
Most of California under mandatory lockdown orders for the next 3 weeks to help control the spread of COVID-19. Yesterday, President Trump signed an executive order that ensures Americans get the COVID vaccine first.
This is one of the greatest miracles in the history of modern day medicine. The ultimate decision rests with the governors of the various states, and I hope the governors make wise decisions.
The Trump administration says most Americans will be able to get a COVID vaccine by late spring. Meantime, across the pond, a word of caution today about that Pfizer vaccine. Correspondent Vicky Barker.
Thousands of people, mostly over 80s and some hospital workers, got the Pfizer vaccine on the first day. And now the health service here has revealed 2 health workers with a history of severe allergies suffered allergic reactions. It's warning people with significant severe allergies to avoid the Pfizer vaccine for now.
That's Vicky Barker reporting from London. Still to come this Wednesday, supreme rejection in Pennsylvania, mandatory vaccine in New York, and the mad dash for the Christmas tree.
Well, good afternoon to all. We're dealing with a little winter-like weather across our region today, but some milder days are ahead. I'll have the complete forecast in 10 minutes.
Okay, Kevin Williams checking the stories making news where you live in New York and Pennsylvania. Wednesday, December 9th, the High Court turned down a request to throw out Pennsylvania's 2.5 million mail-in votes. Republican Congressman Mike Kelly claimed those votes were unconstitutional. Pennsylvania elections attorney Larry Otter.
It was a one-sentence order from the Supreme Court saying denied.
Otter says the timing of the congressman's lawsuit is what doomed his case.
You're a day late and a dollar short. In fact, you're 6 months late.
You can't wait to see if you win or lose with those rules and then say they were unfair.
Election lawyer Jason Harrow says the Keystone State conducted 2 elections using the new mail-in rules. That's probably why the U.S. Supreme Court refused to hear the case.
You've got to challenge the rules up front before you see who wins with them.
Pennsylvania expanded mail-in voting in October of last year, but the pandemic this year resulted in a record number of ballots coming in, which critics say led to widespread fraud. Conflicting reports about a potential COVID shutdown in Pennsylvania. Several media outlets reporting last night that Governor Tom Wolf would be announcing today the new lockdown orders. Those orders reportedly included closing schools and restaurants and limiting those social gatherings. Governor Wolf says while he is monitoring the health crisis closely across the state, he will not be locking it down like what he did when the pandemic began last spring. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo updating how the state will roll out the COVID-19 vaccine once it becomes available.
The scale of vaccinating every person in your state is just massive.
The governor says 75% of New York has to get vaccinated in order to achieve what's known as herd immunity. That won't be easy.
50% of the population says right now they don't want to take the vaccine. You cannot get to 75% if 50% don't take it. That's, even I can do that math.
New York could have the COVID vaccine by next Tuesday. A bill before the New York State Assembly would make a COVID-19 vaccine mandatory in the Empire State if herd immunity is not met.
I shudder when somebody suggests that. I mean, to think that we live in America and government would make it mandatory to inject something into your body.
Western New York State Senator Patrick Gallivan says he's all for the COVID-19 vaccine, but making it mandatory? Well, that's simply un-American.
No question a vaccine is needed. I would encourage people to take the vaccine. I think we crossed the wrong line constitutionally when our forefathers intended if we mandate.
The legislation to mandate the COVID-19 vaccine in New York was proposed by Manhattan Democrat Linda Rosenthal. Hospitals in Buffalo bracing for a surge in COVID patients.
We need all the help we can get. We're preparing for the worst.
Tom Quatroche at ECMC says adding COVID patients to their normal patient load will put that hospital near the breaking point.
We were to increase to 50%. I think the hospital systems would be stretched, but we can handle that. Beyond that, we're going to need additional help from the state, from retired clinicians, from anybody that we can get help from, because the system is going to be very, very taxed.
Governor Cuomo asking hospitals across the state to increase their capacity by 25%. Governor Cuomo temporarily putting an end to those in-person press conferences. Family Life's Brandon Dixon.
The governor held his first Zoom press conference today to update New Yorkers on the battle against coronavirus. Previously, Cuomo had addressed the media in person, but a spokesperson for the governor says the change was made in accordance with CDC guidelines and to prevent reporters from being exposed to germs. It's unknown how long the change will last, but the briefings will be streamed live on the governor's website. Brandon Dixon, Family Life News.
Thank you, Brandon. High-risk winter sports at Corning Community College have been canceled because of the pandemic. That means no more basketball, cheerleading, dance, volleyball, or wrestling at CCC. Meantime, Section 6 in Western New York has voted to postpone all high school winter sports until the new year. The pandemic causing a mad dash for those live Christmas trees this holiday season. In fact, so many trees are being sold that farms are closing early.
This will be the first time in our history that we've had to close early for tree sales.
Jeff Roba had to shut down his family farm this week in the town of Scott, Pennsylvania.
The Christmas tree industry is not really built for these kinds of spikes. It takes 8 to 10 years to grow a tree, so you know it takes a lot of planning, and I don't think 10 years ago anybody would have predicted that this is the situation we'd be in 2020.
Roba says sales at his tree farm up by 50% because of the pandemic. Let's pause for sports. Your two-minute drill.
Yeah, let's start with Tuesday night football. Lamar Jackson back for the Baltimore Ravens, back from that COVID protocol. He threw 2 touchdowns, ran for a third. Ravens beat the Cowboys 34-17. Jackson threw for 107 yards, ran for 94 more. Baltimore improving to 7-5 in a big game against Cleveland next.
Everyone just got to do their assignments. I feel, you know, we can pull it off. You know, we got the Browns right now, great team. We got to come to play. You know, we're going to Cleveland. Just got to be ready to play football.
As a team, the Ravens ran for 294 yards, a season high. Andy Dalton threw for 285 yards, 2 touchdowns and an interception in the loss for the Cowboys. But Mike McCarthy says it's not over yet.
So we take those steps of playing well in all three stages, and particularly for all four quarters. You know, you're not going to win these kind of games. That was evident tonight.
Cowboys fall to 3-9. College basketball, big upset. Penn State crushing Virginia Tech.
And what a run here on the basket by Wheeler. 17-0. Penn State leading 17-3.
Penn State with a big 75-55 win against the 15th-ranked Virginia Tech Hokies. Number 21 Rutgers all over Syracuse.
The Scarlet Knights make the extra pass and find Harper again, who is scorching hot right now.
Winning 79-69. There will be no Michigan-Ohio State football game this year. The Wolverines have canceled Saturday's scheduled game in Columbus due to an increase of coronavirus cases within their program. With only 5 games played, Ohio State is not eligible for the Big Ten Championship. And Saturday's regular season finale between Cincinnati and Tulsa being canceled due to coronavirus concerns within the Bearcats program. The teams are still scheduled to meet in the American Athletic Conference Championship game December 19th. Both teams finished the regular season 6-0, Cincinnati sitting at 8-0 overall. For Family Life, I'm Sonny Dolphia.
Thanks, Sonny. Still to come on this Wednesday edition of the Noon Report, a U.S. lawmaker linked to a Chinese spy will have the very latest, a potential problem with that Pfizer vaccine, and college, kids, and COVID, a real answers you don't want to miss.
It's that time of year again. Christmas sales, Christmas carols, and the accusation that Christmas isn't really Christian. Let's talk about it. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. Several years ago, in a documentary called Religulous, it's clever, isn't it? Bill Maher claimed that most of the story of Christ, especially all those parts about his birth, were probably cribbed from pagan mythology. After all, Maher said, the Egyptian god Horus was born of a virgin on December 25th, was baptized, had 12 disciples, performed miracles, ultimately died and rose again. So Christianity is, of course, he said, nothing but a cheap knockoff. Well, the problem, as numerous critics have pointed out, is that Maher's claims are complete nonsense. No original source material backs up his description of Horus, or for that matter of Mithras or Krishna, two other deities that Maher claims early Christians copied. As ridiculous as Religulous is, some of its same claims about the origins of Christian holidays remain effective, and they tend to surface most around Christmas time. For example, how and when did the church determine the date December 25th? Was it to compete with a Roman festival of Saturnalia? And what about trees or gifts or lights? Where did they come from? And what about those pagan stories that resemble Christ, of sons of the gods and corn kings who died and rose again? Well, recently, historian and longtime friend of the Colson Center, Dr. Glenn Sunshine, joined Shane Morris to talk about these things on the Upstream podcast. Now, Glenn's a favorite teaching faculty of the Colson Fellows, and I can assure you, he is no Grinch. During his conversation with Shane, Dr. Sunshine answered some of the core questions about Christmas. For instance, he argued that December 25th was not chosen as the date for Christmas in order to co-opt an already existing pagan solstice festival. More likely, it was based on an ancient Jewish belief that people were conceived on the same date as that of their deaths. Since Christ died on or around March 25th, some church fathers believe that Christ must have been conceived on that day and therefore born 9 months later, which would be December 25th. Now, whether or not this was his actual birthday, no one knows. Still, the choice to celebrate Christ's birth at the end of December reflects a sacramental view of reality, something that Christians have long held through the ages. In this more enchanted view of the world, one that held sway in the early and medieval church, nature itself was understood to have signified the life of Christ. For example, the visible death of winter, the withering of leaves, the dormancy of the ground, longer nights, all of this symbolized to many Christians of centuries past the death that Jesus came to die. And the turning of seasons and the increase in daylight symbolized the dawning of the light of the world in a manger. Many of our other traditions, like Christmas trees, probably began as symbols of life in the midst of death. Dr. Sunshine even suggests that this mingling of symbols of atonement with the joyous news of the Savior's birth can be detected in the gospel narratives. For instance, could those swaddling clothes be the burial cloth Joseph carried with him in case of death? And even more, the pagan myths that atheists so often exaggerate in order to attack Christianity offer, at least Dr. Sunshine thinks they offer, tantalizing echoes of Christ in other religions. C.S. Lewis also thought this, and he wrote of what he called good dreams, or, quote, those queer stories scattered all through the heathen religion about a God who dies and comes to life again, and by his death has somehow given new life to men. For Lewis, these echoes were not evidence of religious plagiarism by Christianity, but evidence that Christ is the true myth, the waking reality behind these good dreams. When we celebrate Christmas well, focused on Christ as opposed to stuff, we do more than just repeat old traditions. We glorify the King of Kings who came to save his people from darkness and ultimately make all things new. For Breakpoint, I'm John Stone Street.
Coming up on 20 minutes past the hour Wednesday afternoon, let's take it outside. Meteorologist Kevin Williams.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. A bit of a wintry day today, starting with a snow cover and some slippery spots, especially across western and central New York and the northern tier counties of Pennsylvania. Moving forward, temperatures will be on the rise as this disturbance passes, and later in the week, we could be flirting with 50 degrees. For this afternoon, cloudy, with a few patches of snow, flurries, sprinkles, light rain showers scattered about, and temperatures slowly rising, mainly 30s, reaching the low 40s in spots. For tonight and tomorrow morning, cloudy, couple of flurries and sprinkles, 30s tonight. Becoming partly sunny tomorrow afternoon, low 40s. Milder Friday, partly sunny. High temperatures Friday will be nearing 50 degrees.
All right, Kevin Williams, appreciate it. If you're just joining us, here are some of the stories we're following for you today, Wednesday, December 9th. Bombshell report from Axios says China has been targeting California Democratic Congressman Eric Swalwell in a scheme to get insider information from the U.S. government. House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy fears This may just be the tip of the iceberg.
This congressman now gets on the Intel Committee. They are only selected from the Intel Committee by the leaders of their party, meaning Nancy Pelosi. Nancy Pelosi is one of the Gang of Eight, along with myself. Did Nancy Pelosi know this had transpired when she put him on the committee?
McCarthy says this Axios report poses a serious problem for Nancy Pelosi. Former Utah Congressman Jason Chaffetz says he doesn't understand why Eric Swalwell was put on the House Intelligence Committee in the first place.
He doesn't have a deep intelligence or military type of background. He was very young when he was elected to Congress and then put immediately onto this committee. And why? Why do all these things happen? And why does he continue to sit on this committee? When this comes to light, she should get rid of him. There's no way he should be on this committee any longer.
Mo Alethi, the former communications director for the DNC, says while the Axios report is disturbing, both sides of the political aisle have been targeted by the Chinese.
What we know, based on the reporting that's been done, is that there's no evidence that any sort of sensitive information was passed along, that this person targeted a number of elected officials just mainly through their campaign operations, but that there's no evidence that there was a particularly close relationship between the congressman and this operative.
Just last week, National Intelligence Director John Ratcliffe said China posed the greatest risk to our democracy. President Trump may be done in Pennsylvania. The U.S. Supreme Court denying Congressman Mike Kelly's lawsuit to overturn the election result in the Keystone State. Family Life, Sarah Harnish.
Kelly had argued virtually all the state's mail-in ballots were unlawful because they came in after the deadline. But the Supreme Court handed down their decision without a single comment last night. It is a near fatal blow for President Trump. The president suggested he thought the justices, including three of his nominees, might step in and take his side, alleging massive voter fraud in the election. The one-line order was issued with no noted dissents. Governor Tom Wolf has already certified Biden's victory in the Keystone State, and the state's 20 electors are set to meet on December 14th, Monday, to cast their votes for Joe Biden. Sarah Harnish, Family Life News.
Well, despite the high court's refusal to take up his case, Congressman Kelly says this fight is far from over.
We were not granted a temporary injunctive relief. It does not mean that our lawsuit does not go forward. It means that the temporary injunction relief, that part has been taken away.
George Washington University law professor Jonathan Turley says the Pennsylvania case before the high court proves that new Justice Amy Coney Barrett isn't just a rubber stamp for the president, like many Democrats had accused her of being.
During her hearing, they put out these conspiracy theories that she was being put on the court to kill the ACA or steal the election. None of that seems to be true.
And while the president's case may be over in Pennsylvania, it's just getting started in Texas. State Attorney General Ken Paxton asking the high court to nullify electoral votes from Georgia, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. Paxton says those states exploited the pandemic to make unlawful changes to their state election laws.
It is the response of the state legislature, per the Constitution, to set the rules for election of electors. And in this case, those were overridden in the four states we're talking about, were overridden by other officials, whether they were judges or other governmental officials. And that's not the way our Constitution works. And that's the challenge we have in front of the court.
The president's legal fight, though, is running out of time. Next Monday, the Electoral College meets to certify the vote. The U.S. now averaging over 200,000 new cases of COVID every single day.
Not surprised. People are still out and about, hoping that if they, you know, continue to live their life, this too shall pass.
The FDA will review Pfizer's vaccine tomorrow. The Trump administration says most Americans will be able to get the shot by late spring.
People that aren't necessarily big fans of Donald Trump are saying, whether you like him or not, this is one of the greatest miracles in the history of modern day medicine.
But there's a potential problem with the Pfizer vaccine, the U.S. drug maker warning British health officials not to give it to anyone with a significant history of allergic reactions. Joe Biden, meantime, says he'll aggressively pursue a national vaccination program during his first 100 days in office.
100 million COVID-19 vaccine, at least
100 million COVID vaccine shots into the arms of the American people.
The COVID lockdowns continue across the country, too. Massachusetts shutting down gyms and restaurants, while a local judge in California declaring that state's ban on outdoor dining unconstitutional.
We live it. We see it day in and day out. And we also understand and recognize that all of our guests are taking these safety precautions very seriously. So even when they do dine outdoors, they're doing so in small groups and they're socially distancing. And we're getting crushed like an anvil on a dove bird.
Andrew Gruel runs 7 restaurants in Southern California. Google says the top searches for the year were coronavirus and election results. Zoom, Chadwick Boseman, and murder hornets also getting our attention this past year on the World Wide Web. 25 minutes past the hour. You're plugged into the Noon Report on Family Life.
Welcome back to another edition of Real Answers with Christopher Anderson. Wednesdays during the Noon Report, we tackle the tough topics facing today's families with licensed mental health counselor Christopher Anderson. And Chris, what a semester it has been for all of the school-age children, including and possibly especially college students.
Yeah. That's for sure, Brandon. I mean, we definitely have been really in uncharted territory here, like you said, especially for our colleges and universities.
So what are some of the challenges that the higher ed institutions have had to address?
One of the major hurdles for our brick-and-mortar schools has been developing a comprehensive plan for maintaining some sort of normalcy during this pandemic. And though this doesn't sound surprising, of course we would have to do that, there were so many intricacies that it really overwhelmed a lot of staff on many college campuses, especially the student affairs staff. Definitely, every time you turned around, there was some new consideration, which then would change all the other considerations. It was just an ongoing, constant battle to keep up with the things that we were learning about this pandemic and the things that we needed to learn and what did we need to do to actually maintain some sort of a normalcy for the students that are coming to college to have a social experience in addition to their learning experience as well. So colleges partnered with county health departments to manage the pandemic locally as best as they possibly could with these rapidly changing circumstances.
And I'm assuming this is going to continue into the spring semester.
Yes, absolutely. And if there are any college administrators listening right now, your local health departments need to be your best friends right now going into the spring semester. Again, this semester will be starting at the peak of normal flu season as well. So, of course, every sniffle, every cough will be suspect this year, even though there will be a high likelihood that those sniffles and coughs are going to be due to a cold or a non-COVID-19 flu case. But being able to determine which is which and how to handle that is going to be quite a task for not only our colleges but also our health departments going forward into this upcoming winter.
Now that we have a few months to look back on this, what lessons have been learned during this past fall?
Good question, and of course that question alone could make this segment go on for hours, but in a nutshell, I'll try to do my best here. I think there are lessons that we learned that were very specific to both the processes of operating a university during a pandemic, but also lessons on more of an individual basis in terms of coping and what do we have it in ourselves to get through a tough situation like this. But, you know, I think I'll just stick to the theme of today's segment, and that is looking at the overall operations of the university. And like I said before, schools need to work very, very closely with county and state health departments. So if you think about it, students that attend universities and colleges in person, they're coming from all over the country and the world, really, and obviously could be potentially bringing the virus to one concentrated area, that college campus, where you're concentrating many different folks in one spot. So many schools opted to require pre-arrival COVID tests. But managing the influx of all these test results, which many times are submitted via a screenshot on someone's phone, turned out to be very difficult. I mean, there were a lot of problems with that collection process that I won't get into. So in response to that, I would encourage schools that are maybe requiring tests or that have a certain set of return procedures to start messaging out to students right away what they're going to require in January. Because there may be different arrival times, and there might be different groups of students arriving at different times that they'll need to be aware of that. And it's also very important to make sure that students know to check their email, other postal mailings, listservs, whatever modes of communication that the schools are using to communicate with their students. Parents, I strongly recommend that you get your students to check their campus emails every single day, because you don't know, as soon as campuses receive word from Albany or Harrisburg or one of the counties, they're going to be sending out that information to try to keep parents and families updated as much as possible. We encounter a lot of problems when students tell us, well, I just don't ever check my email. Well, there's the problem right there. So that is a very, very important that students are checking their communication to find out what the latest is. But I also think that we learned that college students, being the social creatures that they are, that there's only so much that we can do to prevent breaking the social rules right now. They really need to toe the line with this. In other words, college administrators need to enforce those social rules, even though we often hear the excuse, well, you know, they're college students just being college students. Well, at this point, under these circumstances, that's a hard excuse to throw out there, okay? So parents, sit your students down, tell them that you will be supporting whatever decisions are being made by the administrations to protect their campuses, because we got to keep in mind, these administrators are not only protecting their campuses, they're protecting the college towns in which the employees have their families. So lots of writing on this right now.
Once again, you've been listening to another edition of Real Answers with Christopher Anderson. It airs Wednesdays during the Noon Report. We tackle the tough topics facing today's families with Christian counselor Christopher Anderson.
Thank you, guys. Let's head outside before we leave you today. Meteorologist Kevin Williams.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. A bit of a wintry day today, starting with a snow cover and some slippery spots, especially across western and central New York and the northern tier counties of Pennsylvania. Moving forward, temperatures will be on the rise as this disturbance passes, and later in the week, we could be flirting with 50 degrees. For this afternoon, cloudy, with a few patches of snow, flurries, sprinkles, light rain showers scattered about, and temperatures slowly rising, mainly 30s, reaching the low 40s in spots. For tonight and tomorrow morning, cloudy, couple of flurries and sprinkles, 30s tonight. Becoming partly sunny tomorrow afternoon, low 40s. Milder Friday, partly sunny. High temperatures Friday will be nearing 50 degrees.
Okay, Kevin Williams, finally at noon, stargazers are in for a gift this holiday season. Reporter Mark Mayfield tells us why.
In what's known as the Christmas star, the two biggest planets in our solar system will be the closest they've been in the night sky in nearly 800 years. Jupiter and Saturn will be closest on December the 21st, the winter solstice, which is the longest night of the year in the northern hemisphere. The last time Jupiter and Saturn were so close and visible without a telescope was the year 1226.
That's a long time ago. Thank you, Mark. Mark Mayfield reporting. That is the world we live in this Wednesday. As always, thanks for coming along. I'm Bill Price. Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.